The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
The Football Show. On Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to make my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern-day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Back on the Premier League weekend that was on Saturday, Aston Villa beat Arsenal 1-0. Aston Villa in ninth, Arsenal's tenth now. United drew 3-3 at Old Trafford against Everton on Sunday. Spurs got a win, Chelsea got a win, and of course Man City got a win as well. Gary Breen, evening.
Good evening, Joe.
It has been a while. Great to have you with us. So just like that, for all the jostling over Christmas, for all the talk of title race, for all the Manchester United hope, the sense that Liverpool might get in a row, here we are, first week of February, and it's feeling pretty much done.
It does, to be fair. And not just because of the troubles other teams are having, but just how consistent and how consistently brilliant Manchester City are right now. And that's even without the likes of De Bruyne, Aguero. It just shows you the quality of Pep Guardiola again, Joe, because it's looking odds on now for 3 Premier League titles in 5 years. That just shows the quality of this manager.
What was your take on the game yesterday?
I was fascinated by it. I really was. In terms of the build-up, I was really looking forward to it. I know Manchester City are in brilliant form and obviously Liverpool are struggling a little bit. But you always believe that Liverpool have the tools within their armoury to hurt City. They have done. We know that Guardiola has struggled at Anfield. But it was just the control more than anything, Joe, that City play with now. And I haven't had the opportunity to see Ruben Dias live, but I've been so impressed with him. You only have to look at the stats in terms of since he's come into the club. And early on in the season, Manchester City had that drubbing against Leicester, conceded 5 goals. He signed the next day. And the impact that he's made, not just in his own performances, Joe, but what he's done to the players around him, the likes of John Stones, is just a renaissance, really, in terms of his career. But it's all down to the quality of the coaching. Again, in terms of individual brilliance, we know Manchester City have it. But the level of coaching is just so impressive. I look at that Manchester City team, the terms of the control that they have, that you're not really able to lay a glove on them. And it's all on the back of the coaching quality of Guardiola.
And at different points over the last couple of weeks, you know, it's a joy to watch them. And then the analysis afterwards, you see, you know, Canseo's popping up in midfield and doing various things. And you know, you love to see the originality almost of Guardiola's thinking. Did he come up with anything yesterday which grabbed the eye or impressed you?
Well, certainly the change at halftime, I felt he felt that they weren't really influencing it. He changed it to a 4-4-2. And straight away, Joe, at the beginning of that half, you could see the two advanced players forced up there. And it's no surprise then that when you have someone in your eye line, what looks a simple pass when they're about 5 or 6 yards deeper is not. And obviously, Alisson makes those mistakes, but Cancelo going into that midfield role was the key moment, wasn't it? Steps into midfield from that fullback position, makes the pass that breaks the line, suddenly Foden's in and get a couple of good ricochets. But nevertheless, the quality in terms of how good they were in that tight area. But the originality, we have actually seen it before. When you think about Philipp Lahm as one of the best fullbacks in the world for Bayern Munich and Germany, we saw him at times at Bayern Munich playing in centre midfield and we're like, it's just so different. But the setup of it, Joe, in terms of that control, talking about those fullbacks coming into those centre midfield positions, it just shows you the change that Guardiola's done this season. Listen, he's improved the defensive individuals. Yes, he has. But by putting those fullbacks into central midfield, they don't get countered like they used to before because they've got that solidity there. And I just look at it and I just think he's a genius. He really is.
Phil Foden is graduating before our eyes as well from moments of promise and brilliance to just full-on threat, mainstay in the team.
Yeah. I mean, the physicality of him, well, he was so slight, wasn't he, when he first comes into the team. And obviously, an ex-teammate of mine, Lee Carty, was coaching at Manchester City. And he was saying, I've never seen a young player who can take the ball as comfortably as this. Now, bearing in mind, Lee Carty would have been at Everton with Wayne Rooney when he burst onto the scene. And likewise with Robbie Keane with Ireland. I think he would have been there with Damien Duff at Blackburn as well. So that was high praise indeed. But then you're looking at the situation thinking, well, listen, you're obviously a very talented young player, but to make a mark in a Manchester City team is going to be some ask. But now you look at the situation, he makes substitutions. Now Foden's staying on. He's taking off his more experienced players. And you can see why. He's so slight. He's effortless the way he covers the ground. And yet, even though he's so slight, opponents seem to bounce off him. That time he knocked it down the line and just showed the pace that he had against Fabinho to draw the foul, this player looks like he's got the whole world at his feet.
It was very interesting afterwards. Pep Guardiola was talking about Foden.
Yeah.
And he said, sometimes Phil still doesn't understand some positions and what you have to do. So in the first half, he wasn't in the right position that he should be in. But we'll work on that. He gets a little bit distracted in these issues. Playing wide's a bit easier for him. Hopefully he'll understand and improve because in the first half he was not in the position we needed him to be in. But he will learn. And a bit like Sterling, when Guardiola got his hands on Sterling, we saw the footage and turning and just, you know, turn your body out this way and all that kind of stuff. Man, Foden's going to get the right education here. I mean, he could be right place, right time in terms of the grounding he's about to get.
What an opportunity to work under that level of coaching as well. And there was a period, Joe, wasn't there, over the last year, 18 months, where people are saying, Foden has to go out and play, he has to go on loan. And I, listen, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But even at the time, I was thinking, no, just let him be there with his brilliant players, with his brilliant manager, and let that be part of his education. And we're seeing the benefits of it now. Of course, Sterling, you're talking about the end product. He was incredible yesterday as well, wasn't he? And he showed up. I mean, in terms of Alexander-Arnold, we know his strengths going forward, but Sterling showed his weaknesses defensively. But having said that, I think he could do that to most fullbacks. He was that good yesterday.
It's amazing the way their run has crept up on everybody because they were so indifferent, obviously, last season. And for much of this season, looked average enough. And you thought, is Guardiola losing interest? And it's, you know, he's into unprecedented number of seasons with the same team. And then Stamford Bridge, you know, the switch is well and truly flicked. So they're on 14 and counting now in the top flight. It's as close to unprecedented, really, as you'll get. Arsenal in 87. Oh, yeah. You'll probably remember. Fond memories. And Preston North End in 1891-92.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible because I when I saw that stat about Arsenal, I don't really remember then. Obviously, the famous back four and stuff like that. It was the beginning of it under George Graham. But this is what's so incredible about it is that the slight changes, the little bit of a variation. There was a period there where people are looking at Manchester City and saying, listen, they don't press with the same energy now. They're looking vulnerable. People are talking about the centre-halves last year. I remember Stones and Otamendi playing at Norwich and just looking woeful, really, in terms of a team like Norwich are able to counter-attack at them. As good as you are going forward, if you're not able to repel just one basic counter-attack, you're always going to struggle. But he's adjusted it. That player comes in, Ruben Dias, that we said. But it's just the coaching around it. Manchester City are not pressing like they did last year or even in any of the seasons now under Pep Guardiola. Their pressing stats are actually the lowest they have been for four seasons. So it's as if they're sitting back and saying, well, listen, we've got this solidity about us. We'll let you come on to us and then we'll hit you with our quality after that. Mm. And it just shows you that even though Pep Guardiola is a genius, he's not one for resting on his laurels. I don't think Jurgen Klopp is either. I think every season, Liverpool have evolved slightly, and certainly Manchester City have as well. And the problems that maybe people are aiming at Liverpool is the fact that Jurgen Klopp felt he had to address that lack of creativity in midfield. Thiago comes in now, and that dynamic now is just slightly changed by a midfielder who wants to hold the ball and looks to break in terms of possession-based football, as opposed to the three before last year, who were just looking to get that ball forward as quickly as possible to that incredible front three. And you can see in the stats, I mean, I'm not mad into stats normally, but Liverpool's stats are way down in terms of how early they hit those passes. And I think at times you probably look at Thiago as that type of midfielder who wants to hold onto that ball a little bit longer than the guys did last year. So it has been fascinating. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm not getting to see as many games or commentate on as many games as previously because of the pandemic. But when you actually then sit down, I knew I'd be chatting to you this evening and really dissect what has been different. I've loved it. I really have. And I'm looking at Manchester City now because everyone talks about defensive numbers and it's great, but they're not a defensive team. And I think about that great Arsenal back four. And certainly I think about the Milan team with Franco Baresi, how great they were defensively. And also in Premier League era, maybe that United team who went 11 or 12 games without conceding a goal, Van der Sar in goal, Rio and Vidic at centre half. And it's that level of control. That's what I love more than anything. And probably why I wasn't that excited about, say, even for the national team with Ireland and Martin O'Neill. We were getting loads of clean sheets, weren't we? But never felt we were in control of the situation in the way that these defensive masterclasses we're seeing now. And I don't know, I was kind of looking at it and thinking, I don't know why I gravitate towards that a bit. I'm probably doing, even in, say, for example, Mayweather as a boxer, a brilliant boxer, but you just can't hit him. He's defensively so good that you just can't hit him. And that's the type of thing that I look at and think, wow, you've just got to be such elite level to be able to control situations the way even say the Dubs team do in terms of winning all the All-Irelands they have, I mean, it was a horrible feeling, but they go down a man against Kerry in the final a couple of seasons ago. And I'm thinking, well, Kerry going to win it there? And that brilliant Dublin team just controlled the game from that moment after Cooper gets sent off. And it's just those type of things that I just look at and think, I'm just in awe of it. I know it probably sounds a bit boring, but I love it.
No. You're making my head spin. Gary Breen on All Sports. This is beautiful. Keep it coming.
Listen, I'm no expert on that, but you do gravitate towards it. You just do in terms of people in total control of their kind of environment.
Liverpool, bad champions, said a certain somebody in the Sky Sports studio yesterday.
Yeah, listen, he's great. He's great away with his statements. Of course he is. And listen, he's got that body of work behind him to back it up. But I'd counter that by saying, you're talking about the injuries and he was quite flippant about it. But if you take Van Dijk and the injuries Liverpool have, it has a massive bearing on man.
Well, that's the question. I wanted to ask you. So Van Dijk, say, returns and they regroup for next season. Is that them, do you suspect, City off the back of a bad season themselves into this season? If Van Dijk comes back and they reset and regroup over the summer, do you suspect that's Liverpool ready to more than challenge again next season? Or are we starting to worry Klopp has a bigger job in his hands?
Well, no, listen, he's going to have to kind of refresh it a little bit, I'm sure. But Van Dijk comes back, it'll make a massive difference. And I don't think that the problems that Liverpool are having are going to be ongoing. I think they're easily remedied when they get everyone back fit. Now, Roy can say that, but I was looking at Roy done his cruciate, that famous tackle with Haaland?
Yeah.
He misses that season. Arsenal win the league by 1 point. That is the one season in six that Manchester United didn't win the Premier League.
Yeah.
So you can talk about key players. Roy was a massive player for Manchester United. They weren't a one-man team, but when you take someone out who's as influential as Roy, as Van Dijk is, and as Laporte was injured for Manchester City last season, it does have an impact.
He feels there's a bit too much moaning. Actually, sorry, that reminds me. Here's a clip. Here's Jurgen Klopp, and this was Israeli radio. So, look, I get it's probably a pain when you're a manager because you have to do a line of global media at this stage. And you'll hear him talking about two questions. The rule is, it's all very strict and it's all contractual. This particular person gets two questions and two questions only. And look, have a listen. Klopp is in no mood.
City have got a game in hand. It's obviously 10 points gap now. Can you see any scenario of catching up with them? Or is it just for Liverpool now fighting for the
top? I really think you should be to prepare your job a little bit better, to be honest. Just how can you ask up? They're 13 points away, in my understanding. And this question about becoming champion, do you really think that's an appropriate question in the moment? You have only two questions and you waste one for that.
No,
your fault.
You the second one questions. Was about possibly fighting questions. For the top
Sorry.
Four.
You had only two questions.
So is it mainly about the top four? Questions.
You had only two questions. You know, the second one was, you wasted it. No, I think they're runaway. Yeah.
My second part of the question was about if you think now it's mainly about focusing on the top four for Liverpool after tonight's performance. That was the second
part. Yeah, that's obvious. We tried to do that.
Okay, thank you, Major.
Thanks, guys.
I look, Jeff Shreves, Des Kelly, they can get into a tussle with him. That just felt a little bit lacking in grace.
Well, it's difficult. The emotions are so high. We've seen, managers, don't really respond to it. And it is difficult because even as a player, sometimes you have to come out and talk. And it's the last thing you want to do. You haven't got a clear head as such. You're still emotional. I'm not surprised. It's not the first time we've seen him react not particularly well.
Are they moaning too much? I mean, that was Keane's big charge yesterday. Too much moaning coming out of Liverpool.
I think at times it would frustrate me a little bit, Klopp, in terms of coming over to the Premier League. That he keep going on about the fact of this winter break. He wanted it. They had it in the Bundesliga. Couldn't understand why in the Premier League you play more games. So he was moaning about that a lot, and that frustrates me. But in terms of moaning about the injuries, I think it's just a statement of fact. They've got big injuries and they're impacting. It's as simple as that. Roy's Manchester United legend, isn't he? And he's never going to miss an opportunity to leave one on Liverpool, is he?
Well, I don't think he's forgotten Jurgen Klopp calling him out on Sky Sports national television a few months ago.
Oh, no doubt. He doesn't. I'm sure he doesn't let things like that go too easily, Roy.
Yeah, there's a black book somewhere and Klopp's name went into it. What was I saying to you? Yes, Alisson, his mistake. Both mistakes. I mean, there's the second one. The first one, it was like he lost his composure for about 30 seconds. He had a few chances to regain himself. That was hard to fathom.
Yeah, it was strange, bearing in mind how comfortable he's on the ball. He's been doing it recently. And I don't know whether or not he feels he has to play a bigger role because Van Dijk isn't there. I don't know. But it was not like him. We could hear the commentary. Jamie Carragher was was like crying, wasn't it? One stage, the groan comes up when he was trying to do a drag back.
Yeah.
And I think with his experience, normally, if you make a mistake like that, don't chase after it. Just, you know, regroup, get rid of, not get rid of the ball, but play a simple pass and play your way back in.
Yeah.
But then he tries another couple of difficult ones and suddenly the game's over.
It'd be interesting to see how Liverpool approach the rest of the season now.
Oh, listen, it's a massive challenge for him. And Klopp, obviously, you're going from being defending the champions and trying to defend your title, but only Guardiola's done it in the last 12 seasons. It is a very difficult thing to do. I don't know why that's the case, bearing in mind how good a team Liverpool are.
Mm.
But yeah, they definitely have a challenge now for that top four. They really do. And they have some difficult games coming up. Obviously, Leicester away. Then they've got the Champions League game now that's in Budapest, and Everton as well. So there's some tough games. And I think there's a few teams behind them now in some real good form.
Mm. Did you catch the game at Old Trafford on Saturday?
I saw the goals. I think just listening to the reports, I think United were quite comfortable at one stage.
Yeah.
Everton showed a lot of character to stay in it as such, but to concede a goal so late on, is, you know, there'll be question marks against you. Of course they will. And certainly what I have noticed, Joe, in the last couple of weeks is Solskjaer now saying, listen, we're not title challengers. And you're thinking, well, why aren't you? This is a season where you've got a massive opportunity. At the halfway stage last week, the points total was down 25%. Now, if you want to bridge the gap in terms of how unbelievably consistent City and Liverpool have been over the last 3 years, this was your opportunity. And to talk it down now doesn't seem like the Manchester United way.
No, and they were the only team really with virtually a clean injury list. I mean, everybody ready to go. He could move the squad around and it seemed
and
to
the quality of the players, Joe, when you've got someone like Bruno Fernandes, who's just absolutely changed that team incredibly. And you think, you know, the money invested in the defence, and they've got really good players on their day. And it's just the consistency. And at a time when everyone else is struggling for consistency, I'm not convinced he's in the background or certainly in the changing room saying to these players, you can't win it. I don't believe that for one moment. I'm sure he thinks they can. But it was a strange comment to come out with.
Gary Neville afterwards, he was making the point he thought it was one of United's better performances, and he's come away from games over the last month or two where they have won and nicked a goal, and he's thought, well, the performance wasn't very good. He was saying weirdly on Saturday it was a good performance, but the result obviously wasn't good. De Gea has to come up again in conversation for that third goal, that Dominic Calvert-Lewin one, certainly in studio afterwards as well on Sky. Jamie Redknapp was pointing the finger massively at De Gea, and you know, he was just saying, like a goalkeeper there, when Calvert-Lewin takes that touch, he has to expect to be smashed by goalkeeper taking ball and man. And I mean, you don't want to be too harsh, but De Gea came out in almost a I don't want to get hurt kind of a way here.
Yeah. Well, certainly when you think about probably the one keeper that comes into mind is Schmeichel flying out and that big starfish making himself as big as possible. And you do see goalkeepers doing that. And I'm not sure De Gea has ever enjoyed the kind of physical challenge of the Premier League. He's obviously been a brilliant goalkeeper. But yeah, there's no doubt in terms of the mistakes that he's made over the last 18 months. And then you add that one to it again. He's certainly not at the level that he was before. And of course, Henderson at 23 is itching to play. In terms of his performances for Sheffield United in the Premier League last year, they were very good. But being a goalkeeper for Manchester United is a completely another level.
Yeah. Dare I ask you about Arsenal before we go?
Yeah, no, listen, in terms of Arteta going in there, you're thinking, okay, yeah, and it's looking good. But that's 10 losses now, Joe, already. That's just as too many. And you're looking at the scenario and thinking, Partey's injured again. And he's a big miss when he's not in that central midfield area. There are some real green shoots to look at in terms of Smith Rowe in that 10 position, Martinelli, Saka, Kieran Tierney. Kieran Tierney, he's the type of player that you're just so proud he plays your team, aren't you? He's just one of those players. He's probably like the way we are with Seamus Coleman for Ireland. You're just delighted that he plays for you, because in terms of how he conducts himself, not just in terms of how good he is on the pitch, but just rolls his sleeves up, doesn't he? So there are some, obviously, pluses, but still that level of inconsistency is a concern.
And what would the sense of Arteta be amongst Arsenal fans, in so much as you can kind of deduce that as one yourself?
Yeah, I think in terms of being around my mates growing up and all that, obviously still, I'm not going to the games now, but still massive Arsenal fans. He'll have that bit of time longer as a player. They can obviously see his qualities. There's some who still think, listen, in your first managerial job, you get the Arsenal job. I mean, And this is not one for continuity. This is a massive rebuild at Arsenal in terms of clearing the decks with serial failures, really, at Arsenal. So many of those players, he's slowly but surely doing that. And that's not to say they weren't good players, but they're just not at a standard associated with Arsenal, certainly if Arsenal want to be challenging at the top of the Premier League. So it is a massive job. They're not going to have the financial muscle to kind of like buy their way out of it. So he's going to have to develop players, these young players coming through. And I have no doubt he's a very good coach. I have no doubt about that. But
right.
You have to win games.
Yeah. And are they losing them in any particular way that's becoming a bit of a trend, or is it just all different ways?
Well, initially, in terms of their ill-disciplined players getting sent off, yeah. and then you're thinking about, I don't know, at centre-back, David Luiz, who on his day as a footballer is fantastic. He's got all the attributes. But there'll be moments where someone just drifts off his shoulder and scores a goal. Certainly that Southampton game, I felt that Southampton could have scored a number of goals on crosses. Arsenal kind of get away with it, win the game. Mm. But I don't know, there's just a worry. I just look at that scenario and think there's still a lot of work to be done there.
Mm. So did you say, or did I miss here, you're not watching as much football in the pandemic?
No, I'm not getting an opportunity as before as such. I'm busy doing other things now. So I've missed it. I have, but it will change. We'll get back there soon enough in terms of going to the games live. I've got an FA Cup game this week. I'm going to watch Sheffield United, so I'm looking forward to that. But it's nice sometimes because you take a little step away, kind of rethink a bit, and then you come back and see these teams and see the development. There's some real noticeable differences, certainly, as we talked about earlier about Manchester City.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed watching them this weekend.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were almost saying that you'd not quite fallen out of love with it, but just almost lost
interest. Oh, no, not at all. No, not at all.
Just work.
The pandemic, yeah. The pandemic. Can't get over to Ireland as much, or certainly get to the games as much as I used to.
Okay. Very good. Well, listen, lovely to have you on again. Gary Breen, thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe. Take care,
Cheers.
Mate.
That was Gary Breen. And our football coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
Welcome along to this evening's football show. Later on, we'll hear from Damien Delaney. Latest at Ellen Road, it's 1-0 to Leeds against Crystal Palace. Second half just getting underway. Jack Harrison with the goal after 3 minutes. So Leeds 1, Crystal Palace 0. We have much to discuss with Pat Nevin. Hello there. I was just letting it run on a little bit. Why not?
Why ever not? I never get bored with the tune, so don't worry about that. And I'm smiling and I'm laughing as well at the moment because your network made me laugh out loud there. So, well done. I don't think it was deliberate though, because just in the news there, you've got a yellow snow and ice warning. And yellow snow where I come from, something else like. Got me. Well done. I'm just about to crack there completely.
Don't eat it is the warning.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that. Anyway, and you talk about ice and snow. Oh, it's so cold, man. I was at the Wolves game the other day. And I'm doing Everton on Wednesday against Spurs. Mm. And I promise you, I'm not complaining, right? No, you cannot complain when you're going to watch football games just now and everybody would be desperate to get there. But trust me, there's no media room or anything like that. You're sitting outside for 5 hours solid. You know, nobody near you. Usually even the fans being in there makes it a wee bit warmer. Honestly, I've learned all sorts of new tricks of how to keep warm, honestly. It's when people sort of whisper, have you heard about the new electric gilet that they've got going just now? Everyone's got these new tricks to keep warm. It's extraordinarily weather at the games at the moment, but it's not a complaint.
Yes. Well, you're not the only person I've heard of late, quote unquote, not complaining about the cold. It does seem like it was extraordinary over the weekend.
Yeah, it's and apparently next day or so could be even worse, and up until Wednesday or Thursday could be even worse. But it's that weird thing. It's a psychological thing as well. You're in an empty stadium, and if the wind's going towards you, and there's no one around you to break it. So it's all just basically coming at you all the time. And I'm looking around at people, and Matt Elliott was standing right behind me, you know, big, strong centre half. Honestly, God, I thought he was going to end it. He couldn't move. He looked as if he'd like frozen solid by the end of the game. So they used to laugh at me because I've got this tiny wee heater that I bring with me that you can just plug in. And they all used to laugh at me. And a certain Conor McNamara laughed at me for 45 minutes and then pleaded with me to borrow it for the second half, which indeed I did give him one of the games recently. So I don't care. Say anything you like, just I'm not going to freeze.
Are you going to many games at the moment?
Yeah, loads. It's a kind of strange thing because there is this kind of guilt trip you've got because no one gets... because it's news talk, right? We tell the complete truth, okay? We're all desperate to be able to travel. So if you say to me, Pat, can you do that? I'll say, yeah. But you've not told us the game yet. I'll say, no, I'll come. Mm. I'll go. But you go all the way there. I had to travel all the way to London, so which is a 400-mile drive. And then from there to Wolverhampton, which is 140, then all the way back to Scotland to do two games. And I didn't meet a single human being in that entire time. Mm. So you're organised in such a way, if you go do this right, you drive, you hope you don't break down, obviously, you get car service beforehand. You do petrol stations where you don't even go inside, you just pay for the petrol, you take your own food on the way. And that's the way to do it. You don't meet, and the only people you meet is people inside the stadiums. And as many people have told you, I'm sure you've talked to, who have been at games, the stadium's about the safest place in the UK, certainly at the moment, because you don't get near anyone. There's, you know, the players and everybody's kept separate. You've got all the checks when you go in. It's an extraordinary way. It's an odd way to live life. It really is an odd way. But to be honest, any excuse, I think most of us feel if you've got a reason or stroke excuse to go out, and we've got these papers, if you work for the organisations I work for, you've got a right to go out and because it's necessary work.
Anything apparent from being at these empty stadiums that doesn't come across on TV?
Well, obviously the noise is the most of the TV are putting kind of noise in the background now, and they are trying to deaden some of the microphones. You're hearing absolutely everything now, and I've mentioned to you really early on, I remember a few months back saying couldn't get my head around the amount of squealing that was going on, you know, absolute squealing from certain players, and that is only certain ones, and it's still going on. It's very, very, very noticeable. It's also very noticeable the referees almost always fall for it. They just almost, as soon as you go, and a big screamy voice, the referee gives a free kick. And of course, you can hear it more now than you can hear it in normal times. It was an intriguing one of the week, during the week there, because one of the players I'm really confused by is Adama Traore. And I watched him, he completely confuses me, right? Because, you know, first time I watched him, I'm absolutely honest, I thought he was hopeless beyond belief, right? Absolutely useless player. If he wasn't fast, it would be fourth tier, right? That's what I thought of him at the time. Mm. He's actually improved massively, and I'm really, really, really impressed by him. But he's one of these players who goes so fast that any time you touch him, he falls on the ground. Mm. And it's really complicated to know what is a foul, what isn't a foul. And the referees have now just, some of them have just given up, just won't give him fouls, even when he is fouled now, because he always ends up on the ground. Unless he gets cleaned by somebody, he ends up on the ground. But he started with a kind of squealing a wee bit early on in the game at Wolves there. And then by the end of it, the referee's ignoring him. And oddly enough, he stopped it. It's kind of weird that, isn't it?
This is big muscle-bound Adama Traore.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, it is, again, one of these people, watching him up close, you know, I mean, funnily enough, when you're in your stadium on your own and very few people, you almost feel it's like a park game, you know, because you're that close and it feels a wee bit more intimate. Mm. And his stupid amounts of pace. I mean, ridiculous in how he does it. From this standing start sometimes against guys who are pretty, he was against Justin, the fullback for Leicester the other day there. And Justin's good, he was really up for the battle. But when it comes to a foot race against him, over 20 yards, it's just a joke, honestly. It's, the guy's ridiculous how quick he was. So I was intriguing to watch that. I mean, that's kind of different, that's very noticeable. Another thing noticeable, players turn around a lot more. They didn't used to, you know, the manager screams at you. He's wasting his time. You can't hear him. But now you can. You just kind of turn around all the time, listening to what they say. And oddly enough, I kept an eye on the managers in this one, particularly the weekend. And both the managers actually stayed quiet most of the time, weirdly enough, because they now realise everything they say is now picked up, you know, by opposition, by their own players, by, you know, microphones at the side. So Brendan Rodgers was actually quite Sphinx-like in the side. But some managers can't hold themselves back at all. So it's still an odd feeling, you know, and all the games are going to. But it's still, I have no complaints at all. I'm honoured to be able to go to the games.
Yeah,
and
sure.
After a while, I've got my headphones on. You kind of forget about it and you just do the game.
I would have said I hadn't noticed too much different about the empty stadiums until just the other night. Don't ask me why, but I found myself watching Manchester United against Chelsea from back. It's during Jose's time. Ronaldo's very young, so maybe somewhere. I'd guess about 06. When did they win the league with that Joe Cole goal where he spun?
I think it was 05 or 06. Around about then. Yeah.
That territory, that day. And what was really noticeable, it suddenly jumped out in a massive way, having watched all these games behind closed doors, was the amount of histrionics after every small decision. And so referee would blow whistle, crowd would go ballistic either way, either wanting a booking because Man United player had committed the foul or outraged that the referee had given the foul against Chelsea. And then the players got caught up in that as well. And there was a lot more in terms of verbals and pushing and playing to the galleries a bit more. And a part of me thought, you know what? I don't really miss that, to be honest. That's it's just a bit tiresome.
You're right. They only get angry now when they're really angry.
Yeah.
Which has got a good reason to be angry. And we'll do the McTominay, the first minute horrible tackle he got, which was still horrible to think about. But in actual fact, you're right. There's not quite as much of that. The other thing which is quite clearly different is the home and away, which is completely bizarre. You know, the whole concept that for many years, people used to say to me, well, why is it different home and away? Why the home team gets so much an advantage? And, you know, you kind of try to get an answer to it most of the time. You know, it's a bit of grass. It's the same size, you know, and there was a million answers to it. You know, like, you know, you've got all the crowd behind you. They're putting pressure on the referees. You get more decisions, all that sort of stuff. And you look into it, the psychology of having your own sort of feelings around you, your own comforts around you, all that sort of stuff. It's gone. It's completely gone. It just doesn't exist anymore. I could not believe it when I heard the other day that even now, well over halfway through the season, there are more away wins than there are home wins in the Premier League this season, which is just bizarre. So it set me on to thinking, and I started going and I checked out Serie A, I checked out Liga, La Liga, just to see if the same was happening in Bundesliga as well. I mean, Serie A, it makes no difference. It's just dead level, home and away. No difference at all anymore. England's a wee bit further, actually. It's better for the away team. Bundesliga's a little bit. La Liga doesn't seem to have changed a great deal. You know, they've still got a bit of a home advantage there. But it's really weird that it's a thing. If you didn't think it before, know it now. The crowd makes a difference. It makes a gigantic difference. And over a period of the season, it absolutely does.
Well, it's been a real show of restraint on your part to not mention Twickenham. I mean, that's the real miracle of this conversation. That's a miracle.
I was building up to it. Don't worry. I mentioned it on the radio, on the UK radio the other day. I built up that whole thing about and then ended with Twickenham. And I got annoyed silence, which was exactly what I was looking for at the other end of the line, which was an astonishing thing to see. I mean, and again, is it 38 years since Scotland had won the Calcutta Cup down there at Twickers? So, and they actually got there, and it's the odd thing. I actually can cope with Scotland getting beat by England at football. I can kind of cope with it. I hate it, but I can kind of cope with it. I'm not in a depression, but I can't cope with it with rugby. I just can't cope with Scotland.
More primal attack on your manhood, is it?
I don't know what it is. I've never played a game of, well, I have played the odd game of rugby, but I've never been to a Scottish international rugby game. It's something about the purity of the sport, you know, and the kind of, you know, there's not the cheating bits. You know, everything's about, it's not animalistic. I don't know what it is. It is a purity thing that I love that sport for what it is, for the rugby. And it seemingly means that much more. And when they win, of course, it's exactly the same. It's just overbearingly so much better. So I think we were quite happy here in Scotland to get that result. That wasn't bad. Ireland were unlucky, obviously, with 14 men. That was a tough one.
Yes, it was. We're dancing around the unfortunate truth, staring us in the face, that the title race is over and it's only February. We'll get to that in 1 second, but we'll go to Ellen Road. Firstly, Dave Eason has an update for us.
Leeds 2, Crystal Palace 0. Patrick Bamford gets the goal he's deserved for his efforts this evening, and made by Mateus Klich, who played the ball in beautifully behind the Crystal Palace defence for Rafinha. His low drive was saved really well to his right-hand side by Guaita, but on the follow-up there was Bamford to make it 2. It's Leeds United 2, Crystal Palace 0.
I think because lockdown 3 is so grim and January was grim and everything else, and there was a vibrant sense of a title race and the novelty of Manchester United suddenly back in it and the Liverpool United game and all that stuff, I thoroughly enjoyed the month's football. I mean, it was actually a massive, wonderful distraction. And so therefore, it's a bit grim to think now we have no title race for the next, what, all February, March, April. 4 months. 4 months without a title race. Suddenly, these games in empty stadiums will feel a bit like fulfilling fixtures for Man City.
I did say to you, the only team I thought could run away with were Man City, but I've not said at any point that I think they will, but they're the only ones that could, because I didn't think Liverpool had a big enough squad or deep enough squad. Manchester United hadn't got it right yet. So nothing seemed possible, but there was a possibility that City could run away with it. I still don't think they have. You know, I've been to enough of their games recently. I mean, I was at the Brighton game where they... Second half, they looked by average. They really did look average against the Brighton side that just played them at football and played an open game. So, you know, if you watch, you know, again, go back to, was it 5 weeks ago, people were telling me Liverpool have won the league. So I'm not going to get carried away. We're just past halfway now. Having said that, if they get, you know, De Bruyne back, it's quite scary because that adds a little bit, you know, extra to it as well. But remember, you're just about to hit that period now where, you know, the Champions League games are happening. That's going to have an extra hit. I mean, Chelsea at the moment, I think they've got 7 games in February. I mean, and obviously Man City have got all that sort of stuff as well, going onto all the competitions. So that's going to make a difference. It's going to affect a number of teams. And it will affect Liverpool, it will affect City, it will affect Chelsea. It looks very, very likely, like Manchester City just now. However, you know, you just never know. Is that a 14-game winning run that they're on just now? And that won't last. You know, something will happen. It just happens in the Premier League. They've not battled everybody they've played against. But so I'm not absolutely not writing it off now. And I don't think people should quite yet. But they're beginning to drop off now. You can't see Chelsea catching them. You can't see Liverpool catching them now with 10 points and a game in hand. So they're picking them off one by one. There's very few that can stay with them now.
Yeah, and they're 5 clear of United with a game in hand. So suddenly 8 points, and it starts to get a little bit difficult to see, to be honest. Because of the others as much as because of City.
Yeah, the other thing about it is, I think, again, I'm expecting it for 2 years and it's not happened, that Liverpool would suffer from the limited squad. And it's finally happened, and it was staring at you in the face in that game. You know, you've got away with not having centre backs for a while now, but come on, eventually it's going to hit you.
Yeah.
You're against some good attackers in the Premier League, and eventually it's just, I just keep on saying, I'm so impressed that they last that long or lasted that long. But suddenly, I think a lot of teams are beginning to say, oh, there's the weakness now. Okay, we've been waiting for that, and now we can get it. And they understandably had been leaning on Van Dijk for quite some time, among other players, but also leaning on that front three, always getting them out of a hole. And it just wasn't going to last forever. The brilliant thing about City, of course, if you take Harry Kane, the classic example was, I was at the Leicester game, as I say, against Wolves. Leicester, a really good team. I mean, a really good team, but you take Vardy out of it, it's a massive jump downwards. Everybody else is just a little bit less because they don't play as well because he's not making the same runs. And I was watching, I closely watched Ian Acho, and he's a good player. But then you watch Vardy coming on when he comes on, and you just think, actually, you're making just about 10 times the runs he's making, and you're making them all the time. And you just want to get one, and you will never stop. And it's really weird. So you take Vardy out of it. Same with Spurs. Get Harry Kane back. Look, fantastic. It didn't look fantastic when Harry Kane was out. I mean, they looked really average. It was doing the Chelsea game against them, and they looked really average. And you could say that almost for Liverpool to some degree as well. You cannot say that about City. You just can't say it about them because you've taken De Bruyne out and they look just the same. So maybe that's the killer above everything else. There's quite a lot you can take out of Manchester City, and somebody else steps up to the plate. And Gundogan, maybe more than anyone else, looking at Gundogan just now. Again, I'll put my hands up. We knew he was a good player. And then you watched him when he was here, and you think, no, really? Is he that good? And then, of course, as soon as David Silva disappears and a gap opens up and Kevin De Bruyne is not for you, there, there's suddenly this space for you to become the main man. And he just steps along with Phil Foden, and it's wild. It's fantastic.
Kind of interesting to watch the various interpretations of what's gone wrong at Liverpool. Roy Keane, in a no-nonsense way, is saying, too much moaning, too many excuses, don't want to hear it. If you're a big club, then you defend your title. They've been bad champions. No more nuance required. And it's terribly entertaining. And, you know, we'll be seeing Roy in that studio for a long time to come. But, I mean, you've been flagging this issue of tiredness and a lack of depth for a long time. And even Jamie Carragher this evening put some very instructive stats forward. So, for instance, 2018, he said, from the point this team became great, for want of a better word, if you look at most Premier League appearances since 2018 in the top 10 across all teams in the Premier League, most teams have like one player in there. So United have Rashford, for instance. Liverpool have five. Liverpool have Salah, Firmino, Robertson, Mane, Wijnaldum in the top 10 of the Premier League, most appearances since 2018. And that's not to mention their Champions League exploits. They're wrecked. They're tired. That is a huge part of this. And Carragher made the point that, you know, Mane, for instance, effectively played a year straight of football. He got a 10-day rest, but a year straight of football, he was back on the bench for a Norwich game after being away on international duty. And it was because Jurgen Klopp knew 98 points was not good enough to win the league the year before. We cannot lose the game, literally, basically. And so you'd love to talk to Klopp at his most unguarded and ask him, did you know you were flogging them? Did you know that this absolute cliff was coming and just said it was worth it?
Yeah. By the way, I'd say exactly the same about Salah. You know, we watched him. I was at the World Cup in Russia and I was thinking, you've done too much already, mate. And that's back in Russia. Mm. And he was hobbling along there trying to do it for his country. And because every game is the most important game. But after a while, you've got to say, it's unnatural. I mean, it's kind of a little bit easier for the smaller players because the recovery is usually a little bit better. You know, they're not lugging an extra 2.5 stone or whatever it is around with them. But eventually, it must give you, they're not superhuman. It is going to catch up with you. And again, I go back to, I'm kind of with Roy in one thing. Look, stop making excuses. You built the squad. If the squad isn't the right balance, that's nobody else's fault. Don't moan about the you should have actually had a whole bunch of other centre-halves to walk in there. You know, you should have had good enough backup that when one of the front three is out, they are good enough. They're not, you know, Origi's been okay, and you talk about scoring goals in Champions League finals, but look at the numbers. They're not anywhere near the others that he's playing alongside. So you need to make sure that you do that. You know, it's about balance the squad. I mean, I'm not going to say anyone can do it, but if you can get these world-class players and get 8 or 9 of them and stick them all together, that's fine. But if you leave the rest as a much, 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 it was almost like a shadow squad, it must eventually come back. And to be honest, I've complained about that with Man City once or twice, but only defensively. Because I think Pep understands this concept about a squad that, okay, I know I haven't got enough to get 22 world-class players in every position I'd like to. I'm trying to do that, 2 in every position, right? But I can't. Right, where am I going to skimp and save? Maybe full-back, left-back, something like that. Maybe I won't spend as much in centre-backs to some degree as I will in these attacking-minded players that are going to score me the 5 goals. And I think he makes a balanced judgment in that. I think it didn't work for a year. And I think they lost the title because of it. But if you look at it now, the balance looks okay because he's probably getting the best out of one or two players and he's getting Diaz and Stones working together as a couple. I think also when you buy a player that can play 2 or 3 positions, that's the joy of that. That gets you out of so many holes. So you've got Cancelo. And if you want to stick him right wing back, right midfield, right centre back, right back mostly, left back as well, no problem at all. You can do all of them. And that's the way around it. I'm not saying that Liverpool have done that enough. They've got a lot of specialists and probably one in Milner who's, you know, an all-rounder who can cover that. But, you know, he's getting on a little bit and you need more than that.
There is one obvious point, though, which I haven't made, is that these players all had a long time off during the lockdown. Why didn't that serve to regenerate them?
you know, regenerate them, but you'll still get injured. And of course, remember, all the games are concertinaed at the moment, so they're all close together. You can't stop getting injured. That's going to affect you. And also, this, you know, A, they're not getting any younger. I mean, it's Bill Shankly, to hate to wind up Liverpool fans. I'm trying not to wind up Liverpool fans, but it's Bill Shankly, and then Paisley said the same thing. You strengthen not on the way down, on the way up, or certainly when you're at the top, that's when you strengthen. And it was kind of clear and obvious they had to strengthen. Now, to be fair, Jota is a bit unfortunate for them, isn't it? Because he got that injury. But you look at the rest of it, have you really strengthened? Have you bought as good or slightly better in? Maybe Thiago, you would argue to some degree, might have worked as well as Bruno Fernandes worked for Liverpool, for Man United, but he hasn't quite the same. But really, for a team that was that far, that high up, doing that well, and I just wonder in the end, does it come to, it's nothing got to do with Klopp, and it's nothing got to do with anything other than pure finances of the owners. Did he go and ask for what he thought he wanted and didn't get it? Maybe that's the case.
Yeah, he must
have. No, I would suspect he did.
Pep Guardiola on Phil Foden. He said, sometimes he still doesn't understand some positions and what you have to do. So in the first half, he wasn't in the right position that he was meant to be, but we'll work on that. He gets a little bit distracted in these issues. Playing wide's a bit easier for him. Hopefully he'll understand over time, because in the first half he wasn't in the position we needed him to be in, and that is why we suffered in some moments to have control. But he will learn, and I'm sure he will. I mentioned that to Gary Breen earlier when we were having a bigger conversation about just, you know, what a great thing it is for Foden to be, you know, under Guardiola's tutelage and what he's going to learn about the game. And John Stones has made a point, I just watched it earlier this evening, where he was saying, like, geez, I felt like a kid again when I went to City, and he started almost reteaching me about the game. I wanted to ask you, when you look at Foden, aside from all the brilliance, his positional sense, did that jump out to you in any great way via the television?
The thing that gets me is, I've tried to talk to people who know how to play 10, as it were. He was kind of slightly false nine at start, but Foden eventually, like the rest of them, say, oh, want to play 10, around about that sort of area, right? So that's kind of where he's going to be best at eventually, you would imagine. But it's tough because you've got De Bruyne wants to do that. You get, you know, Gundogan wants to go there. You've got, they all want to do it, right? But he eventually, that's where he wants to be. So he's spent most of his time in City hanging about out in the left wing there. Yeah, he's very good at it, but that's not where he's going to end up. But you need to give him enough games in that position. And although it looks like the easiest position in the world, it's actually one of the hardest. It's about developing the space. And I think that's what Pep's talking about. The worst thing, because it's a very Britishy thing, you know, they never had number 10s. So they didn't teach it, because nobody to teach it, because they didn't know that. I mean, sorry about the name drop, but I asked Ozzy Ardiles about this.
Oh, of course you did, just, yeah.
Yeah, and he just laughed at me. He goes, well, how, you wouldn't know, because you didn't, never played it. You just don't understand it. And of course, the first thing you learn is you never stand in the number 10 position. That's it. You never stand there. You never go there. You arrive there when the ball arrives, but you never go there. And of course, that's not what our people, they just go and stand beside us 10 yards in front of the centre forward. It's the worst thing you can possibly do, because you're easy to mark.
You're number 10. Go stand there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's exactly the wrong thing to do. So there's A1 thing they all get wrong. So what Pep's saying, because he's played with the best and been involved with the best in the world that possibly ever in that position, he's thinking, well, why don't you know this? Well, he won't know it, because that's not been the culture. But Foden's capable of learning it. He absolutely is. And when he did start developing the space a bit better, although he actually just moved over to the right wing as much as anything else for that game and looked fantastic there. But he's learning all the sort of bits of it. And he does, I mean, he's talked about it himself. He watched and talked to David Silva, who naturally has it in his bones, and naturally had it in his bones. And he tried to learn as much. And he's learned it. But because he's doing brilliantly well and he's scoring a load of goals and it's a joy to watch, the easiest thing in the world would be for Pep to say, oh, you're doing great. And no, he wants more.
Yeah.
He wants bigger. He wants, no, don't be there. Be up there somewhere. That's what he aimed for. Because the kid's got it. The kid can get anywhere he wants to get. I mean, if you stuck him in a classic Barcelona side, he wouldn't look out of place. You know, for pure skills and vision, the fact that he classically never ever looks at the ball, which I love. It's just
that's a Nevin family special.
Oh, I just love it. You know, I'm sure I've told you about when the Australian version of it, what they do. Any of our listeners who haven't heard this before, it was genius. I'd never heard it before. But a year ago, this mate of mine's he's a coach in Australia, and I was talking to him about this concept of, if you do 10,000 hours, you don't need to look at the ball anymore because you know what it is. So you just look around, right?
Yeah.
So drive the car. And he says, yeah, we do that in Australia. We use dog collars. I'm like, what? do you know the collars you put in dogs so that they don't scratch themselves? Well, they put that on the kids so they can't see down.
Like the lampshade collars.
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. Genius.
Genius. And I thought, how simple and how Aussie can you get? It's class.
That is a classic.
It's brilliant. And of course, you feel damn stupid doing it. But I mean, yeah, of course you do that, because then you learn to feel the ball at your feet all the time. And that fight, that 10,000 hours might become 5,000 hours. So, you know, and I'll get somebody sending me a tweet saying, yeah, but there's not been many Aussie number 10s. But, you know, the concept's brilliant. I love it.
It really is. Anything else grab you from the weekend that was?
Nah, just a wee bit saddened, but the kind of referee stuff again. I know we're bored with it and all the rest of it, but it was, I mean, common sense stuff that you say referees, they're not allowed to use common sense anymore. Well, there are now and again occasions when you can use common sense. So when the centre forward hits somebody, or Suchek hits somebody, and then Mitrovic says, it was a mistake, and they all agree it's a mistake, and then he goes, no, I know better. You think, no, you don't. No, you really, really don't. We've told you. It's okay. It's fine. And for him to look at that, and I know there's been the suggestion of death threats towards him tonight, which hopefully that's just stupidity.
Yeah.
But it was honestly, it just makes your heart sink. Because you know what people say? Ah, yeah, there you go. That VAR's got it wrong. No, it wasn't. Nothing got to do with the VAR. Mm. VAR gave him the option to see it perfectly. Yeah. And he still couldn't see it.
And VAR said, are you sure, Mike? We're talking Mike Dean. Actually, I've audio here, Dave Moyes. We can finish in this. So this was Moyes reacting, obviously, to the moment you're talking about.
Everybody's talked about it. Your first question to me, Simon's about that. And I can only see the officials being the people who can stop it by, you know, not allowing players to get away with the actions they're taking. I think every footballer's got a responsibility to do the correct thing. But at the moment, I feel that officials are giving footballers the opportunity to gain success in some way from their actions. And the only people who can stop it are the officials. It's not anybody else who can change it. Because if players are going to continue to do this, then this would need to change. And again, if they're going to be successful and get rewarded by getting players sent off, gaining penalty kicks, gaining an advantage in the game, then we can't let that happen. So there's nobody else can stop it other than the officials. Nobody else.
He's sort of talking about players there as well.
Yeah, and no, Davey and I could be twins with these things, as you well know. And even in the weekend there was plenty of examples of it. I mean, Mo Salah, yes, we love him, but really, do you use your whole body dive into the air when someone tugs your top of your sleeve? You know, and at that point in time, I'm tempted to say, right, okay, it might be a penalty, but I'm still going to book you. I'm so tempted to do that. You know, and the times now, just because they will not red card players, they will not yellow card players for simulation, you just will not do it now. How often are you seeing it? It's never, but we're all seeing that it's happening all the time. And it's up to the officials. It really is up to the officials. You've got to look at that, because the game has completely changed now. It's a completely different game now. And it's a real sadness, because so many games now have been completely decided on the fact that one guy's managed to throw his legs towards another player and fall over. And that's changed. That's the whole game. So you've got 90 minutes of everything. You can talk about try to get your skills to the level of David Silva if all you like. But if a guy can deliberately run into another player, then fall over and get a penalty kick, which is what is happening all the time, which is exactly what Moyes is talking about. It's a different game, and it's really saddening. But I think the officials have gone down that line now. And yeah. It's a real shame that that's how they think about the game now. they accept that's acceptable. And I, my least favourite phrase in the football just now, least favourite phrase, there was contact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't make it a penalty. No.
Robert Pires against Portsmouth was where I first realised the endless possibilities here for this kind of nefarious stuff. You had any game this week?
Yeah, well, I've got Everton Spurs on Wednesday, which I'm kind of looking forward to. Should be a really good one, that one.
Yeah.
And that's very entertaining one, so I can't wait for that one. And, you know, I've got Chelsea next week as well, which interesting to see what Tuchel's doing, because still nobody scored against Chelsea.
Yeah, I know.
Opposing team.
And he stumbled upon a very nice shape very quickly and made it all look very easily. So actually, great. Well, I want to talk to you about Jose, and let's talk Tuchel next week. Pat Nevin, thanks a mil. Cheers. Leeds United still 2-0 up at home to Crystal Palace. Our football coverage and Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. We have Damien Delaney on the way next.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
You're very welcome back. Leeds still 2-0 up on Crystal Palace. 80 minutes on the clock there, so Leeds' good recent form continues. A bit more for you now on Liverpool against Man City. We didn't get into the nuts and bolts of that game with Pat Nevin there, because Damien Delaney was in co-coms yesterday with Nathan. We had the game live here and Off the Ball, and they sat down for a debrief afterwards.
So, Liverpool beaten 4-1 by Manchester City. Damien Delaney was on co-commentary. Is that the title race done, Damien?
Yeah, it feels like a seismic day, to be honest with you. It feels like there has been that shift. They put themselves in the position, and the others fell away the last week. The week with Manchester United had with the loss of Sheffield United, the draw against Arsenal, the draw last night, their challenge has just fallen away now. I think it was always going to be a big ask for Liverpool. I mean, even if they won today and they got themselves within 4 points, when you look at the cut of their squad, it would have been very, very difficult for them even then to maintain pace with Manchester City, because Manchester City have kind of off the bridle now and they're going, so it would have been difficult for them. But Manchester United were the one where they were on a similar run to City, you know, real, real good run at the minute. But when rubber met the road, Manchester United just fell away. And today was a dagger in the rest of the Premier League.
What is going on with Liverpool? They have injuries, but is it too easy to put the blame at those absences of Van Dijk and Gomez and Matip? It feels as though there's something greater going on with the lack of energy, the lack of goals.
Yeah, look, there's two main problems that I see with Liverpool, and the obvious one is centre-back, and you can't get away from that, and it's not an excuse, and it's not people saying that, you know, it's an you're excusing Liverpool. They've got two central midfield players playing there. They've had kids untried, untested, with Phillips and Williams coming in there. Fabinho's done a great job, but he's not going to last the season there. Henderson now is back, and you've the double whammy of losing them out of the middle of the park as well. Manchester City had the exact same problem last year with Fernandinho. Rodri wasn't quite up to speed, and Fernandinho was kind of playing centre-back. He'd done great at the start of the season, but when push came to shove, he ran out of steam as well, and then they got phoned out. They've remedied that with Diaz, and I think Liverpool need to, I suppose, get lucky with one of these two centre-back pairings, because they've took a risk with them. They've not gone done what Manchester City have done and bought you know, proven quality in Diaz. They've gone with a young lad from Preston and a guy that probably most of us have never heard of, to be honest with you, from Turkey. So they need to get lucky, and one of them needs to come in, hit the road running and lift everyone else. The other problem that I believe they have is the front three have been on the road for a long time. And I have said it, that they can't keep pushing the front three as much as what they do. You've got so much out of them.
You know, is that in terms of the energy or just in terms of the style of play that they're quite predictable at this stage?
They both are married into each other. You know, the style of play is hugely taxing on the body. You know, the energy levels required to play the way that they play and to keep flogging the same three players every season for the last three seasons. And they have been brilliant. They tried to remedy it this year with bringing Jota in. Again, it was a bit of a gamble. It was a bit of a, oh, we hope we get lucky. They didn't go out and spend 50, 60, 70, 80 million on somebody and bought proven quality. But luckily, Jota worked out for them and he was brilliant. But now he's injured. So those three are back in again. There was a period just before Christmas where Firmino was out of the team and Jota came in and done really, really well in the Champions League and the Premier League. And everyone said, oh, well, that's the end of Firmino. It's not. You know, you've four players for three positions and you rotate the three of them in. No, unfortunately Jordan's got injured and been out of the team. So as soon as they get him back fit in the summer, Liverpool need a little bit of, I'm going to say, a rebuild.
But I was going to ask, yeah, does it need to be a transformational summer? Because they do have Thiago now, they have Jota to come back, they've bought a couple of centre halves, they've sent Minamino out on loan and to get some game time. when you look at that Liverpool squad, does it need an addition of 3-4 players to get themselves back challenging next season?
It needs some surgery, absolutely. And I think there is some money that will need to be spent. You know, Liverpool have been brilliant in the transfer market in recouping money, and their net spend isn't an amazing amount. I think this summer is the time where the owners really need to put their hands in the pocket, you know, and really say, listen, here's 120 million quid. Go and buy yourself a centre-back. Hopefully Virgil van Dijk can come back the same player that he was. Let's go and spend some serious money on a front three, and then maybe help in the full-back area as well, where they're light. You know, the full-backs seem to be on the same trajectory the front three are on. You're flogging them to death every week. The two of them have been asked to play, Trent and Robertson. They're up and down every week. It's seriously taxing on the body. It would be nice if they had somebody that could fill in for them.
What about Jurgen Klopp's role in all of this and their decline over the last 3 months? He's won a Premier League title. He's won a Champions League title over the last two seasons. But does he deserve any criticism, or should there be any questions asked of him of what's gone wrong for Liverpool over the last 3 months?
The only way you'd criticise Jurgen Klopp for me is if, and you'd have to be privy to the conversations that went on with the director of football and the owners, I'm pretty sure he would have been begging for reinforcements. You know, everybody could see it that the front three were beginning to lag. You know, you could see it at the beginning of the season, form was in and out. Obviously, Salah and his contractual issues. So I'm pretty certain that every day he's speaking to the director of football and the owners, saying, I need money, I need money, I need money. They haven't backed him because they probably thought they were his genius, that he'd figure out a way to get it done. But I think this is proof now that Jurgen Klopp, you know, is great in all as he is, and he is a fantastic manager. You know, you can't make wine out of water, unfortunately. So they need to put their hands in their pockets this summer. Well, I suppose immediately they need to concentrate on getting in the top four. That's probably their biggest one now. I think the Champions League is going to end pretty soon with the form that they're in. I mean, they're going to get ruthlessly exposed, if not by Leipzig, but definitely by the team they meet the next round. That'll probably be the end of it for them. So I suppose the best they can hope for this season is get by Leipzig, maybe get a nice night out or a game against Juventus, or, you know, one of the giants of Europe, and it'll be a nice night, and then cement top four, but really start looking to next season.
What about Manchester City then?
Yeah.
Without Kevin De Bruyne, without Sergio Aguero, so they have their own injury problems, but the form of Gundogan, of Sterling, and of Phil Foden, 14 straight victories in all competitions. When you compare them, and maybe it's unfair to compare them to the City side of 2-3 years ago, are they getting towards that level now?
They're on the way, but I'm pretty sure if you and me sat down and went over the last 14 games, we watched all of them, there'll be periods in the games and probably periods in that time period where Man City weren't great, but they were rock solid at the back. You know, so the games they didn't play well and they nicked 1-0 or they nicked a 2-1, it was built because they had rock solid goalkeeper, centre back number six, you know, so they keeps the momentum going. Unfortunately, Liverpool don't have that, but Manchester City at the minute are on this winning run, not because of all these fantastic players, it's because of the lads at the back. What is it? How many? 7-8 clean sheets, I think it is. You know, and very, very. How many goals conceded in the 14? It's only 4 or something, is it?
I think that's their 14th goal they've conceded all season.
Yeah, but in that 14 winning games, I think it's only 2 or 3 they've conceded. So that's what it's built on. Because when you can do that, it allows these world class players, Foden, Gundogan, and, you know, De Bruyne when he's playing, and Sterling, they'll always get you goals. Man City will always score goals. Liverpool usually always score goals, but unfortunately, at the minute, confidence has been drained out with it. Liverpool, whereas confidence is going high in Manchester City.
You were a centre half. You're watching Ruben Dias there. Okay, he made one bad mistake today, but probably the first mistake he's made all season. He's only 23. He seems to have the leadership qualities. He seems to have it all.
Yeah.
Talk about him as a centre half and what it is he does.
Everything you'd want from him. You know, and even the mistake he made today, Pep Guardiola won't be worried about that, because he'll know that if you take the kind of, I won't even call them risks, but chances that he takes. I've watched him so much. He does that so often, where he sweeps across and doesn't just kick it into touch, or doesn't just hook it away for a centre-forward. He will try and control the ball and find a pass. And that's what the manager asks of him. But the manager will understand that there will be times he will get it wrong. Usually it won't lead to a goal, but I suppose the mistake he made today was pulling back Salah, because I think John Stones was round on the cover, and maybe Salah still would have scored, but John Stones would have had a chance. So his mistake today wasn't the controlling the ball, it was pulling back the shirt. But he's got everything you'd want. Size, stature, we saw him swat Firmino aside in the first half when Firmino was coming square across the pitch and he just pushed him out of the way. He's got everything, and he's helped John Stones as well.
Speaking about players who've got everything, Phil Foden, 20 years of age. The run to capitalise on the mistake from Alisson and to lift the head and to spot the run of Gundogan, and then the finish.
Yeah.
How good is he now, and where is he going over the next 4 or 5 years?
Well, I suppose It was always a running joke that Pep would come up and say he's a world-class talent and never play him for the last number of years, right? And he's obviously grooming him and getting him to a point where he would be not only a world-class footballer, but world-class tactically as well. And if you look at the amount of positions that he plays for Manchester City, left wing, right wing, false nine, as a 10, I mean, that just tells you that the understanding and belief that Pep has in him, and he probably spent those 2 years when he was working with him, instilling that in him, getting that understanding of the game, because he knew he had the talent. Everybody saw him, you know, with the England underage setup, he had that talent. But Pep has obviously seen that he had the mental ability or the mental aptitude to take on board what he's been asked. And you can only imagine what's being asked of him by a manager as meticulous and as fine detail as what Pep is. To be able to play all those positions for Pep Guardiola shows an incredible aptitude for the game.
What is his best position? What's the position in 3-4 years' time, you think? Is he a number 10? Is he a winger? Is he a number 8?
I think his best attribute is the fact that he's as intelligent as what he is. I don't think he'll ever nail down a position. I think Pep will continuously rotate him, you know, and he can fill him in any position. I suppose ultimately the only person that can answer that question would be Phil Foden. Where would you like to play? Where's your favourite position? What would you... And I'd probably guarantee he'd say number 10. He looks like the guy that would want to be central and involved in the game all the time. But he does great on the wings, does great as a false nine for Pep. So his greatest attribute is his aptitude, his intelligence and his willingness to learn.
England have a lot of good young players at the moment. We saw Raheem Sterling, who's still only in his mid-20s. They have the likes of Jadon Sancho coming through, Marcus Rashford. Foden, in terms of the next 3-4 years, are we looking at someone who can go on to become one of the great world players? Is that the level of talent he has?
Absolutely, because he's working with a world-class manager, a world-class football club. They're going to be competing every year at the latter stage of the Champions League, you know, the Premier Leagues. He's going to be a winner. He could be that world-class player that maybe, you know, every team that's done well in international football is that one world-class kind of player that could turn a game on its head. And he looks like he could be that for England. I mean, England has had some great players over the years. But have they ever had that real one world-class player, with the exception of maybe Wayne Rooney? But maybe I think Phil Foden is kind of on a level above that as well, you know, where he could kind of come into pockets and dictate the pace of game and dictate what he wants to do in the game. So he certainly looks like he's that kind of player. And I hope that England find a place for him or find a system for him. And I hope that if England do play him on the right-hand side, that Gareth Southgate can find a way to get him in the game, because it would be a shame if he ended up just being a right-side midfield player, getting up and down, helping the right-back, and became a bog-standard player, you know. So I hope Gareth Southgate realises what he has in his hands, and I hope he can find a position for him, maybe in the 10.
It does feel like it's a defining weekend in the title race. Yeah. Liverpool can't come back from here, but also Manchester United conceding last kick of the game against Everton through Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And those same old problems, Harry Maguire and David De Gea. Do you see any way back for United?
In terms of winning the league? Mm. Absolutely not. I was never, ever concerned that Manchester United win the league. They have a recurring theme, Manchester United, that when push comes to shove and they have to perform, they invariably let you down. And that's a mental issue that they have at the minute. I don't mean that.
Is that what it is? When you look at Harry Maguire, who, if we're talking about England, will be their starting centre half at the European Championship this summer. When you look at his technical ability, is it a technical thing that he's not leading that defence right, or is it a mental thing?
I think it's just he's not a good enough player to play for Manchester United. That's very unfair of me, or harsh of me to say that. But when you I'm comparing him to like a Ruben Diaz or a Rio Ferdinand. So when I say he's not good enough, I don't mean that he's just not a good player. He's a very good football player, definitely. But he's not the Ruben Diaz. He's not Rio Ferdinand. He's not Nemanja Vidic. He's not Jaap Stam. And he will never be that, unfortunately. He's not Virgil van Dijk. He's not that dominant main man centre-back. You know, he just isn't. I think Lindelof's a better player, if I'm being honest with you. You know, I think Lindelof comes in for an awful lot of criticism. But I'd have him, if you asked me to pick between, you know, Lindelof and another, or Maguire and another, I'd take Lindelof and another.
Whenever we do commentary of a game that involves a player, a goalkeeper that you once played with, you're always very harsh on them. You're always bringing up the mistakes they made. Centre-backs are clearly very unforgiving towards their goalkeepers. It sticks with you for a long time. Yeah. Poor old Alex McCarthy, I think, is it who gets it.
He's doing all right.
He's doing all right. Well, aside from the 9 goals he conceded there the other night. When you look at, say, David De Gea and a feeling he should have been braver for Dominic Calvert-Lewin's goal, Do you look at that Manchester United team and think there's probably a team that have lost a bit of trust in their goalkeeper?
No, because, I mean, up until yesterday, he was actually probably in the best period that he was having. He was making some good saves and the mistakes seemed to have been cut out. I think it was the parry into the path of for the first one, is it, when it went to 2-1. I think that was a mistake where he looked like he was frightened. He thought he was going to get clattered. But lack of concentration from, again, he was a world-class goalkeeper. He's dropped off in the last number of years. He's still not at the same level as Alisson and Ederson. So, but all around Manchester United have I think, have problems. You know what I mean? They had three stabs at getting out of the Champions League and they crumbled in each and every one of them. You know, all they do is win one game from the last three and they would have been to knockout rounds of the Champions League. You know, they went to Manchester City in the League Cup semi-final. Again, crumbled. This week, they probably knew it was a defining week because they put themselves top of the league. And as soon as you go top of the league, you are now the hunted. You're not the hunter. And as soon as you go top of the league, it brings a different type of pressure because all of a sudden, you've got something to hang on to and you need to maintain it and extend the gap. But I mean, as soon as they were like second, third, they were doing okay, winning games, creeping along, doing really well. But as soon as they went top of the league, they crumbled. And I think every time you look at this Manchester United team over the last number of years, whenever the pressure comes on, when anything's been expected of them, when anything, somebody's like today, Manchester City were probably told, win this game and the league's done, we're going to win the league, you know? And they went out and they won today, emphatically. Whereas Manchester United, you know, would have slipped up. Going to Arsenal, slipped up. You know, yesterday, 3-2 up in injury time, could have kept up some semblance of pressure on Manchester City, but they gave it up, you know? And I just think that's a mental issue with the team. And that's why I was never in fear, even when they went top of the league. I mean, Joe dragged me into a thing there. I was getting crucified by Manchester United fans, and I was there going, "It's only January, and you've just gone top of the league, you know." So,
today you're going to be crucified by Liverpool fans and Manchester United.
I didn't say that about Liverpool. I think Liverpool are fantastic, but I think even the most optimistic Liverpool fan will admit that they're not going to win the league this year.
Damien Delaney there talking to Nathan. I dragged him into nothing, by the way, and he deserved every bit of it. So a few bits to get through. I should tell you that Leeds beaten Crystal Palace by 2-0. That has gone full time. And congratulations as well to Pat Kiley. He's the winner of tonight's competition. Correctly identified Robin McBride as our Valentine's themed sports star. So Pat, you have won yourself a €300 Aldi voucher. Get something romantic for your better half. If you missed out, another chance to win tomorrow night.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.